FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Financial Survival Network is brought to you today by Orin Resources, a junior exploration company with the appetite of a major. It's hot on the trail of the next globally significant discovery, creating enormous potential upside for you, the shareholder. Orin is one of the most aggressive exploration companies pursuing high-grade, scalable gold and copper deposits, and has a premier seven-project portfolio, including its two flagships, Committee Bay in the Arctic and Sombrero in Peru. Orin's unparalleled technical team and highly experienced management has a history of success in advancing and monetizing exploration assets. No wonder Orin's been called one of the best in the junior exploration sector. Orin trades on the TSX and the NYSE under AUG. To learn more, go to orinresources.com. That's AURYNResources.com.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. Today's 2/11/19. Well, we see gold still clinging above that $1,300 level. Silver retreated back from the $16 level. What's going on? We've got Baltic Dry Shipping Index going off a cliff, a veritable cliff. What does that say about international trade, about our economy, about China's? Where are we headed? Well, as always, if you have an idea where we're headed, then you should write me, kl@kerrylutz.com. Good friend John Rubino's back. We did a roundtable last week with Craig Hemke. If you haven't heard it, please take a look at it. It was really great. And John, good to have you back. So Baltic Dry Index, is it just a blip? Does it mean nothing? Or is it a good time to sell shipping stocks?
Hey, Kerry. Well, you know, it seems like a good time to sell shipping stocks. But the interesting part of the story is as you said, is it a blip or is it something bigger? The Baltic Dry Index is the cost to rent one of those big ships that carry iron ore and other kinds of raw materials around the world. So it's kind of a gauge of how strong the global economy is, because when things are growing, you know, say for instance, when China is still building new cities and airports and things, they demand a lot of raw materials. And that pushes up the price of those ships because they're in more demand. Therefore, the shipping companies can charge more to rent the ships. It has plunged lately to a level almost as low as it plunged back in 2016. We're almost back down to that level. And a lot of that, of course, is due to the trade war between the U.S. and China, which is slowing down Chinese growth. They're not making as many decisions to build out new infrastructure while all this is going on. But there's also a chance that we're in a period of change in globalization, in which this idea that that we were going to have long global supply chains for pretty much everything, and we're going to build stuff wherever the labor is cheapest, and then we're going to ship it to wherever the highest level of consumer spending is, and that's how the global economy is going to work. And you know, that was always a very fragile concept, and because of politics and some technological changes, that may be changing now. It may be that production is being pulled back closer to consumption in a lot of different places. We're certainly trying to do that in the U.S. And if that's the case, that means that the globalization engine, with all of the benefits and the disadvantages that that the system that we've lived under for the last few years has had, or the last few decades now, it may be changing. And that's interesting from both a geopolitical standpoint and a financial standpoint, because a lot of these production platforms like China derived a lot of their growth from the fact that everybody was building factories over there, and then they were buying raw materials from everywhere else in the world. And now if the raw materials that are currently, say, being shipped from Brazil to China are just shipped to factories in the U.S., that that changes the demand for shipping, and it changes the structure of the global economy going forward. So, you know, it's not clear what all that means, but it's an interesting thing to watch because a lot of people have problems with the current system. And I think that plays into the political changes that we're seeing in the U.S. And I think if that continues, then the world is going to be a very different place going forward. But it's certainly a political issue now. And it's one that Trump ran on. And it's one of the big things that got him elected. So if bringing factories back home and renegotiating trade deals with the rest of the world stays an issue, then it's something that's going to be kind of front burner for the U.S. going forward, because it's going to be a major issue in the upcoming presidential election, which could just be a sea change one way or the other. You know, I tend to think, you know, under the dollar collapse thesis, that it almost doesn't matter who's in charge of the U.S. going forward, because we're going to spend insane amounts of money at the federal government level no matter what. We're going to borrow equally insane amounts of money, and the system is going to blow up. But a lot of people disagree with that and think it really matters who is in charge 2 years hence and going forward.
Speaking of which.
So it's all intertwined, and it's an interesting part of a bigger, more interesting story.
Speaking of which, it seems like every Democrat who can put together a pack is running for president. Chief Hiawatha, Elizabeth Warren, she threw her hat in, Kamala Harris, this one, Koblikar, I can't remember her first name. She's a senator from Minnesota. I mean, all these people do not, in a less politically correct day, my mother would say, these people don't have a Chinaman's chance in hell of winning the nomination, let alone the presidency. Is this playing into Trump's hand, all of these marginal candidates? And we have my good friend, someone I know you have a lot of respect for, John, Howie Schwartz, the former CEO and chairman of StarSux. And he, when Howard Schwartz sounds like the sane man in the room, I think you got problems.
Well, the Democrats obviously smell blood in the water.
Might be their own.
Yeah, it might be. But they think Trump is beatable. And they're, of course, completely appalled by him. So they're triggered.
They're triggered,
yeah,
John.
They're triggered. Yeah. I mean, they all want to run against Donald Trump. And Elizabeth Warren had a great line. She said, well, you know, Trump's probably not an issue because he'll probably be in prison in 2020.
Either he will or they will. Either he'll be in prison or all of the Democrats, the entire party will be imprisoned, the entire congressional and senatorial delegations from the Democrats will be behind bars. They probably all should be behind bars, let's face it.
Well, you know, this actually looks a little bit like the Republican field of 2016, where you had this, you know, you had these debates where there are like 12 people out there. And so each one only got a few minutes.
17 people.
Yes.
And there could be 50 people running on the Democratic ticket, Democratic side, before we're all said and done. It seems like anyone who ever harbored an upward ambition in the party feels that this is their time to become leader of the free world.
Well, because part of this is because Trump has really opened up the parameters of debate, where you can say pretty much anything that your base likes and get away with it, no matter how crazy it used to sound. Now you can, if you're on the left, you can say, yeah, I'm a socialist. I believe in raising the marginal tax rate to European levels of the 1960s and 70s, despite what happened back then when they tried it. And we'll give, you know, everything that anybody wants for free. You know, you can say all that stuff, which you couldn't say in the past. And Bernie Sanders also helped open up that side of the rhetorical space, because he said it in the last election and remains very popular with the Democrat base. And he's running too. So you might have Bernie Sanders getting his shot this time around. And then it depends on who he picks. You know, he's going to pick probably a younger woman on his ticket. And it'll be an interesting ticket. I mean, it's going to be a fun debate.
I'll tell you how I am going to decide who to vote for. Whomever offers me a free Obama phone, I'm voting for that guy.
There you go.
All right. Yeah. My vote's real cheap. basically, you know, it's an iPhone. If I can get it for free instead of paying $1,000, that's my guy. I mean, because why else would you vote for somebody? Certainly not because you care about the future of the country or anything else. It's what's in it for me. That's what our political system, John, has devolved into.
You know who is the most interesting story, I think, in the Democrat field now is Tulsi Gabbard.
Yeah, really.
Because she was part of the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, during Hillary's run this last, or during the primary between Bernie Sanders and Hillary. And she quit because she was appalled by how the DNC was ripping off Bernie Sanders, which, you know, it's well known that they did now. You know, they basically cheated him out of the nomination. He would have won if they hadn't cheated him. And she quit in disgust and campaigned for Bernie Sanders. So she's got a lot of friends on the far left and a lot of enemies in the center of the Democrat Party, because she did something that was dangerous and risky for her career, but that she thought was right. So you got to give her credit for that. You know, she took a big risk to do something that was right, and it's possibly paying off for her now, because she's, you know, the Bernie supporters love her, and most of the base think she's interesting, even though she sounds way more reasonable than the average socialist does when she speaks. You know, she's not opposed to border security. Yeah. She wants to seriously look at things like Medicare for all to really see what the details are before she jumps, you know, stuff like that. Like what a reasonable person would say.
Yeah, exactly.
So she's interesting.
Yeah, which is why she can't make it in the Democratic Party, because she appears to be a reasonable person. She's backtracking on all the LGBTQ anti stuff she said before.
Well, she was okay. The story there, and see, I just watched a big long interview with her on Joe Rogan's show. It was like an hour and a half long. And the story with that is that she was raised by fundamentalists and had views that derived from her upbringing until she made it into her 20s, and then she went the other way. You know, she disavowed a lot of the stuff that she said back then.
People
accept that who hear that story, you know, because we all had crazy ideas of one kind or another when we were in high school and college, right?
Look, what a person believes is what they believe, all right? And, you know, you should have the strength of your convictions to express it. Granted, you shouldn't be walking into a... you shouldn't, like, go into a coffee shop in Berkeley and scream out, "Make America Great Again." I don't think that's going to go over, and it might endanger your personal safety. But we need to stick up for our own beliefs. And if we change them, which maybe she indeed has, that's okay, because you're allowed to change. You're allowed to evolve. It's just when you've got to have some core beliefs somewhere along the way, which most politicians appear to have none. I mean, I defy you to tell me what Mitch McConnell believes in, or Chuck Schumer, or what Nancy Pelosi remembers believing in, or, you know, the other guys that are in there. Most of them have no ideological core. And I think that's the problem here, is they're subject to such compromise because they don't believe in anything other than their own power.
Well, see, that's what makes politics in the U.S. so interesting, and in a lot of ways scary right now, is that the door is open for people who sincerely believe things that might be kind of on the fringes of the normal political discourse, to just say them and to get away with it. You know, Trump said stuff that Republicans could never have gotten away with saying before, right? And
they never tried.
And now on the socialist, or on the Democrat side, you've got all these socialists who are saying things that a lot of the Democrat base thought and believed, but never felt like they could say. And now they're all just out there saying this stuff. So it's so much more fun than the usual political campaign, because you never know what's going to come out of anybody's mouth these days.
Yeah.
And that makes it way more interesting, I think. And plus, you know, even if you disagree with somebody, the fact that they sincerely believe what they're saying makes them interesting people. You know, Ron Paul, for instance, is the icon of that kind of politics. True. And so was Ronald Reagan back in the day. It was that way, too. You know, he said what he thought and let the chips fall where they may. And if you're willing to tell your truth, even if it costs you an election, you're an admirable person, at least in that aspect of your life.
And you could say that about Bernie too, although Bernie folded like a cheap lawn chair at the DNC and supporting Hillary against Trump. And it looked like he was beat up. He was definitely roughed up at the convention. And I think he was given an ultimatum, take this money and support Hillary or you're going to live not much longer to regret it. And they made him an offer he couldn't refuse. Maybe he found, his dog's head in the bed with him at night. But anything is possible.
He was presented with Hillary or Donald Trump as a choice, you know? Yeah. And for a socialist, that's a tough choice. You know, you can walk away completely and then guarantee that Donald Trump wins. Yeah. Or you can hold your nose and support Hillary and have the slightly lesser of two evils from your point of view, right? That's that was a tough
It was the evil of the two lessers as far as Bernie was concerned. I mean, he didn't have much of a choice. He could have just abstained because they mistreated his supporters at the convention, shut them out, rigged the convention to make it look like it was this kumbaya moment when everybody at the convention hated each other. The media represented the Republican primary as this hate fest where total disunity, and nothing could have been further from the truth. The Republican Party convention was a major success, Democratic convention, major fail, and yet the media didn't really cover the story, but that's to be expected, and I don't want to go dig up fallow ground here. But the point is, like, you got all these people saying insane things like Sandy Cortez there. Sandy Cortez is like, let's just take over the means of production. Let's just throw out health insurance. And, you know, maybe it's healthy, but the problem is she won't debate it. And she's got her Twitter army out there, John, attacking anybody who questions her intelligence, of which there's not much to question, who questions her values, questions her authenticity. They get Twitter bombed immediately, and that's not helping things either. So social media has had a big impact on these politicians saying whatever they want at any given time. Like, the F word is now acceptable at numerous political rallies. That would have been the death of a candidate 20 years ago.
4 years ago.
Yeah, maybe 4 years ago.
Really. Right. Things have really changed.
My God, they've changed.
One of the scary things about opening up the political process to people out on the fringes, I mean, I think in one sense, it's good because we hear what everybody thinks and we get a broader perspective. But on the other hand, at the fringes, people of both the left and the right really do want a dictatorship. They want
you think so,
Plato's,
really?
Yes, they want Plato's philosopher king. In other words, you take the smartest, wisest person, put them in charge, give them absolute power, and let them run the country according to their high standards. And so they're willing to accept crazy stuff from their guys, and they're not willing to accept anything from the people on the other side. Mm-hmm. And so you get this kind of hypocrisy where, you know, whatever we have to do to gain power and do the right thing is okay, but nothing the other side does for the same goals is okay, because our side is right. Therefore,
our cause the is
ends
just.
Justify the means. You know, we're at the ends justify the means part of the process. And that to me is really scary. And it's also so flawed intellectually, because think about it. If you put somebody in charge and give them absolute power, and if they're perfect from your point of view, they're still only going to be around for a few years, right? Mm-hmm. And we're going to put somebody else in charge. And this is a country that has elected Richard Nixon twice, Bill Clinton twice, George Obama. W. Bush twice, and
Obama
and now
twice.
Donald Trump. Yeah. And so how can you expect the next philosopher king who we put in charge to be somebody who's who you like, you know, who's doing the right thing, because you're handing absolute power to somebody and you don't know who they're going to be 5 years from now or 10 years from now.
Speaking of philosopher kings, we've got Paul Krugman saying that there's going to be a recession. Now, in the Krugman view of the world, Trump's been doing a great job because he's running up the debt even faster than Obama. Krugman was the one who said that the mistake that they made during the recession was they didn't print more money and they didn't print enough. If only they had printed more, we wouldn't have even had a recession. I mean, this guy is off the wall here, John.
Well, it is interesting. I think if you took all the names off of the page and just showed him the numbers, he would be pretty impressed with what the federal government is doing right now, because we're running trillion-dollar deficits.
As far as the happy days are here again, right?
Yeah, I mean, that is the core tenet of Keynesianism now, is that we got to run massive deficits in order to keep the private sector from imploding. So the government has to be the not just the stabilizing force, but the growth,
the driving force.
Yeah, and we have that's what we're doing. So you would think that at least thrilled. As far as the big number, the deficit number goes, the Krugman would be pretty happy with what he's seeing. But of course not. Like I was saying, anything that the other side does is automatically wrong, and anything your side does is automatically right. In this new world, you know, the post-morality world of politics.
You know, if Krugman was in Vietnam, he would have been the first one to say that we have to kill the village to save it. And why doesn't he just say we have to kill the economy to save it? Because that's what they're doing. They're killing the economy to save it. I mean, right? I mean, doesn't that really sum it up here? Debasing the currency, diluting your purchasing power, and putting the hand of government in virtually every industry. I mean, we're killing the economy. How can you expect anything different?
I think this is why you can make the case that, you know, these elections are fun, but they don't really matter that much, because whoever's in charge, I mean, we're already under the small government party.
Yeah.
Running trillion-dollar
deficits. Right. Yeah. Small government, my butt. But yeah.
Yeah. But that, purportedly. I mean, that's what the Republicans have traditionally been. They've been the guys who want to shrink the government and move resources into the private sector, because that's where wealth is created. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, I agree is the right perspective for the federal government. But they completely lost that. Now they just want to spend as much as it takes to get their things done. And in this case, tax cuts for the rich and a massive military buildup. And they're willing to borrow as much as it takes in order to get those things done. In other words, they've got the same attitude as the left, where it's, okay, we're going to do this stuff and we'll worry about how to pay for it later. You know, that's the main political philosophy that dominates the U.S. right now. And it's dominant on both sides of the spectrum. We got to do this stuff that is existentially important, and we'll figure out how to pay for it later. That's an afterthought. You know, we'll manage that. Don't worry now. Let's just get this stuff done.
That's what I call the buy now, pay never plan.
Yeah. And that's why all the big fiat currencies of the world are doomed, which takes us back to the core investment thesis in all this. Because really, you know, without an investment thesis, why are we bothering? You know, if we can't make any money from this, why aren't we just out back pulling weeds in our garden and
having fun
and sharpening our sword and
feeding the chickens, you know, feeding the chickens, because you're going to eat them at some point.
You know, we should be taking care of our own stuff. And so we need to be able to structure our finances based on what's coming in a way that protects our family. And if everybody's going to end up with the same set of gigantic problems, that kind of simplifies things from the investment thesis standpoint of all this, right? You know, you just need to buy gold and silver, put it in a safe place. And then with what money you've got left over, you buy some mining stocks.
And some guns. And ammo. You got to have them. Don't forget. And some emergency preparedness food. And you're set for the duration. But unfortunately, you know, and I know, John, things are never that simple. you know, the future is always uncertain. Maybe they will figure out. The Chinese supposedly figured out how to synthesize gold recently. I mean, it probably cost them $1 trillion an ounce to do it, but they did create gold, zapping something with an electro radio, you know, radioactive current. I don't think they started with lead, but they started with something else, and what they came up with looked like gold. So, you know, so what if it cost $1 billion an ounce? It might be, if there's hyperinflation, that could be cheap, right?
Well, that would be our sell target then. When it reaches China's alchemical process cost, you know, then we sell. But in the meantime, real assets will tend to do well in the world that's coming. But you're right. Nothing is guaranteed, Kerry. You can't predict the details of a lot of this stuff. So what you want to build into your life is flexibility.
Yes.
You want to have job skills that that allow you to do several things at work. So you're the last one fired, and you want to have, like you said, some food stored, just because there might be disruptions in the global supply chain, like we talked about earlier.
Sure.
And you want to be as entwined in your community as possible. You want to have a network of people who you will help if they need it, and who will help you if you need help. Because you really can't predict what's going to happen, but you can look around the world and get an inkling of what's coming. Like France, for instance,
is
a sign of the future.
Ooh, France and England, and well, they were just protesting in Spain to get rid of their socialist. You know, they just elected the guy, and now they want to get rid of him already. It's a crazy world.
People will be taking and see. You know, we got a lot of frustration in the U.S. People are really mad at each other here. After 10 years of an expansion with unemployment at 4%. So what are we going to be like when unemployment goes back up to 12% and the economy is shrinking for two straight years and factories are closing everywhere and office buildings are empty? You know, that's the normal deep recession scenario, which has happened many times. It's nothing mystical, magical. It's just what comes after a long expansion. And people are going to be really mad then.
Ooh,
so civil unrest is just a normal part of what's coming, probably. So you need to be prepared for it. You know, if we become France, then what do you need to do? think it through.
That's
and if we become Venezuela, what do you need to do? So that's the kind of stuff we should be paying attention to going forward.
Yeah, you got to be prepared for no matter what, because something is going to happen and we don't know what. Can't tell you what. You'll know it when you see it, though, that's for sure. Anyway, make sure you check out John's site, dollarcollapse.com. Check out ours, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Make sure you subscribe to both of our newsletters. Just sent one out today entitled "They're Voting with Their Feet," about how people from high tax states like California, New York, Illinois, and a host of others are moving to more favorable climes like Florida, Texas, Washington State, all these places with low income taxes and low taxes, and it's what's happening. So make sure you subscribe to our newsletters, Twitter feed at Kerry Lutz, Facebook page Financial Survival Network. If you're watching me right now on YouTube, unfortunately you're not watching John, but you're watching me, then simply subscribe, share, and like. Also, if you're on a podcast channel, subscribe, share, and like. Really helps me a lot when you do it. Really helps the show a lot. Gets the message out. These ideas are important. Ideas are important. Never forget that. In fact, sometimes all you have are your ideas. John, we'll catch up with you next week. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Kerry. See ya.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.